You're listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
This week's episode is part of the Marriott Investment Series, where we focus on investing and specifically investing for a sustainable income. This week in our investment series, we're going to look at investing offshore. How, why, what, should we, shouldn't we, and if we do, how do we do it? Yes. So back in studio, we have Lawrence Kutsia and Duggan Matthews of Marriott. They have a big offshore presence, a big part of their business. So we thought we'll get them in and put them back in the hot seat.
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. So let's start off by asking, why invest offshore?
I can start off.
Yes.
I think there's a simple, non-technical answer that I can give, and that's because we've got everything here in South Africa.
Yeah.
And not having all your eggs in one basket is just a timeless piece of wisdom. We've got our houses here. We derive our salaries from South African businesses. Mm. Most of our pension funds, their assets are directed towards South African investments. So to spread your risk, at the end of the day, South Africa is a very small economy.
Mm.
We make up less than 1% of global stock markets.
Sure.
So from that perspective, to have all your wealth
in one little country
like South Africa, from a good risk management perspective, is probably not the most sensible thing to do. So having some exposure to high quality offshore investments is a wise thing, we think, at the end of the day to be considering at the very least.
I thought I'd just put in fact of the day. Do you know that our economy, that the US economy is nearly 50 times bigger than ours?
50.
Yeah. South Africa actually punches well above our weight. I think sometimes it's because of our sport. Maybe. And of course the Nelson Mandela factor and all of that, but actually we're really, really small. Lawrence,
No, absolutely. And I, for me, where the smallness comes into is the choice of investment.
Mm.
You know, if you had to look at the choices you can have from a South African perspective versus from a global perspective, you know, South African companies, they're quality companies, but you certainly need more, and there are higher quality companies offshore as well, big picture speaking.
Mablo, do you have any money offshore? Do you have any exposure yet?
No, not a lot. Not a lot. No, I don't.
See, so this is podcast is for you.
Yeah. This is actually for me.
Yeah, I think the reality is most
people,
younger people don't.
Mm.
Because what are we doing? We're paying off debts, rand debts,
yeah.
Paying off our home
yeah.
loans.
Yeah.
So I think if you're gonna be able to accumulate a decent exposure offshore, the best time to start is now, to start early on, and just to make small contributions consistently over time to accumulate a decent investment amount offshore. Because as we mentioned earlier on, having everything linked to the success of a small country like South Africa is a little bit more risky as opposed to spreading your risk across. Mm.
So I suppose in the question that Mapalo would be asking from that, or I mean, I actually do have money offshore, but do I have enough? You don't have enough because you don't have any. So how much is enough? I mean, how much should you be aiming for?
Sure.
This is not financial advice.
Yeah. Yes, certainly not. I mean, I think the question, sorry, Doug, the question we always say is, please go speak to your financial advisor on what is enough.
Mm.
You know, from our perspective, as Doug said, you actually have a lot of your money in South Africa.
Mm.
So from a savings point of view, I think as much as you possibly can.
From a discretionary
perspective.
You only can get up to 25% of your retirement offshore.
Absolutely.
So,
it's now 30 is the number.
Yeah.
But that's with the African, so if you were outside of the African continent.
It's changed.
No, 30% offshore.
Oh God, I'll have to update all my articles now.
So, for me, that I try and live by that. But again, every person is different, and I think it's probably the safest answer to give you on that.
Mm.
We think best value currently, from a Marriott perspective, is offshore. We look at South Africa; the growth from an economic outlook perspective is under pressure. Yes, valuations are kind of pricing that slower growth in, but we still believe best value is in some of these quality dividend paying companies offshore.
And if you think about how we invest money, it's all about those reliable dividend paying stocks.
Mm.
Without a doubt, the best ones that we can find, the best dividend payers from a global perspective, are listed offshore.
Mm.
So we've got some great dividend payers here in South Africa, some of which have been able to increase dividends on 20 consecutive occasions. That would be a standout performer. But if you broaden your perspective and start looking offshore, you've got Colgate and Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble and Nestle, which have been able to increase dividends consecutively on 40, 50, 60 consecutive occasions. So, you know, in terms of the best dividend paying stocks that you can find, the reality is they're typically listed on first world exchanges.
Why is that, Doug? Is that because they've just got global access markets? Or?
Yeah, I think they're bigger. They've been around for longer. They compete in bigger markets. They've been able to build a global presence over time. So if we just think about Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, and P&G, just as three examples, they have a presence in every economy around the world. So not only are you having, I suppose, diversification from going into hard currency, but you've even got more diversification in the sense that the businesses that you'll be investing in have a footprint globally.
I mean, it even takes away that whole sector or geographic discussion. Do I want to be in emerging markets? Do I want to be in the US? Do I want to
be in all of them?
When you're Coca-Cola and you're selling Cokes to the entire world, it really doesn't matter. And they will be in the growth markets.
Absolutely.
So it's,
wherever those growth markets may be.
Where they may be, yeah.
And I think one thing I'd like to just add to this is, you know, a South African type company relative to some of the companies we're mentioning would be considered really small.
Mm.
So I'll give you an example. Nestle, they had an issue in India. Now, I remember the number. It was 75% of noodles, two-minute noodles, Maggi two-minute noodles, which is a Nestle product. They had a 75% market share. But I think it's the food agency found lead in their two-minute noodles. And they had to stop producing for 5 months. They couldn't sell any.
Sure.
And you know that would be a devastating impact.
Oh, it's Tiger Brands.
Mm.
But that would be have a devastating impact on a company in South Africa. But it was less than 1% of their revenue.
Wow.
So I don't know the exact number, but it was nothing. It didn't even feel it.
Even in India, which is a pretty big market.
Yeah, it's a billion plus people. So you can imagine it should be big. But that just gives you just a sense of how diverse, how big their balance sheet is, and how less risky I think these type of companies are when you include them in your portfolio.
And points to the fact that Nestle has been able to increase its dividend for 4 decades.
And Lawrence, you had a lovely graph up just now, which I'm going to ask you to pull up. I'm going to make sure we get this into the article as well.
Which one is that?
And that's the one with the pounds, I'm going to call it up.
Okay.
So Lawrence has pulled up a really, really great graph here that I'm going to make sure we put into the article. So you can just read the article if you want to follow this. Because I thought this was very interesting. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I invest because the rand's going to go one way. Okay. And that's down, by the way. Don't expect the rand to strengthen. Despite the fact that they made the biggest mistake of their lives going out between 2002 onwards, where it strengthened significantly. However, this, just talk me through this. This is a 100,000 rand, a 100,000 pound investment. And the growth and what that would mean in rand.
So for us, what is critical is when you do invest, make sure you invest in something that's reasonably priced, that has an outlook that's going to be decent. So if you look at these companies that we spoke about, you know, you're going to get about a 3% level of income from them in the form of dividends. You are going to get, you know, anywhere from 5 to 7% growth. Let's assume it's around 6% growth in dividends longer term. So our outlook for returns are anywhere between 8 and 10%. So let's say around 9%. If I take off, you know, the fee from our product and some withholdings tax coming off of this, you know, an estimated outcome is to double your money in first world currency terms.
In 10 years' time.
Now the difficulty
so that's growing,
is...
So just to for the listeners, that's going from about 100,000 sterling to 212,000.
Yes. Now that's sterling. Just over, about 7.5% approximately.
Well, I don't know if sterling's a hard currency, but we need more, but let's assume it is.
You could make this dollars if you'd like.
But
I think the question that you were asking is, well, should I go off because of the currency?
Yeah.
For us, what's important is to make sure that your underlying investment's going to grow and there's value there. If we had to look at that and said, well, what happens if the currency in rand terms 10 years from now is 15, 17, 19, 21, or 23 to the sterling? Your outcome is still very good from a 10-year perspective. So first of all, don't worry about the currency when you invest. Second of all, you must look over a 10-year period, because short term, there's big impacts. But when you're looking over a 10-year period, those things that you're worried about actually become less and less important. Mm-hmm. That's really what this is trying to show investors.
So guys, if I want to invest offshore, what are some of the ways to start doing that?
Yeah, so Pablo, you know, there's different vehicles. So first of all, you can go to feeder funds. And feeder funds are really, they're RAND-denominated funds, which uses the asset management company's asset swap capacity to take your money offshore. So you don't have to ask for clearance to take your money offshore. And I think, you know, that's probably an easy way for you to do it. Mm. And I think the access is quite, you don't need a lot of money to go in. I think from a Marriott perspective, it's 500 Rand a month debit order. It's small amounts. Okay. You can actually get access to these companies.
But it comes back in rands. You can't leave the money offshore. All you're doing is getting the exposure to the offshore market.
So you're investing in rands. The actual fund invests in an offshore fund, and you get priced in rands. But you are technically, your money is offshore in those companies. They just you get reported to you in rands. Mm. So that's the one easy way to do it. Obviously, if you think about taking money offshore, you're allowed to take 1 million rand every year without getting clearance from SARS. But then you can do additional 10 million, but you need to get clearance for that. Mm. Now, you can take that into a offshore share portfolio. Or you can take it into an offshore unit trust or mutual fund, as they call them internationally. And that would be direct. So you would buy those shares, take your money, and invest offshore. There are different ways people go offshore. They also possibly might use a wrapper. But it gets a bit technical from that perspective. Obviously, tax is something that everybody needs to consider. And there are different benefits. And I just want to say, it's the easiest way to try and answer this is to go and see your financial advisor, find the best way possible. Depending on how much money you have, you know, those different vehicles are more suited for different investors.
And I think for me, what's quite interesting is, you know, especially if you're wanting to use your tax-free savings account, your benefit there, your 33,000 Rand a year that you can put in, you can actually do that into a Rand-denominated fund, still have full offshore exposure. So that's one way of also looking at it, is using some of that allocation and saying, right, I've got all my money in South Africa, let me maybe put some of my tax-free savings account money offshore, and you can do it for 500 Rand a month.
Yeah, and I think, Maya, you spoke a little bit earlier, you know, there's a tax implication. If you invest in dividend-paying companies, you receive a dividend, and then you must pay 20% foreign dividend tax in South Africa. Mm. So maybe that's one way where you can avoid that. You know, obviously 3% is not a big number when you're talking about that, but there's definitely a benefit from that perspective.
Maybe, I know I'm going to tell everyone who's listening to this podcast that please go speak to your accountant about the tax implications for investing offshore. However, I would like to at least raise some of the points that you need to be speaking to your accountant about. Lawrence, is my correct? Because I have to just tell everyone listening that I said to ask Lawrence and Doug to talk about the tax, and they said, listen, Maya, you know, you need a tax expert. So I said, look, let's at least raise
just
the things you need. Touch on things. You need to know this. And I think the one is, and I invest offshore. I have full disclosure. My money happens to be with Marriott, so I know how it works. And there is the dividend tax. So unlike in South Africa, where the withholding tax, you don't see it. It gets taken by the company that pays the dividend. If that dividend withholding tax is less than 20% offshore, I have to pay in the difference in South Africa. So every year when I do my tax return, it's terrible. I pay tax. It's tax on my investments that I haven't benefited from, right? Because my dividends are being reinvested. It really bites me, okay? And then I have to consider things like the fact that if something happens to me, I pass away, the estate duty when something's outside of the country. So is there perhaps, does it make sense, and Mapalo knows I'm not crazy about wrappers and endowments for various reasons, but could it make sense perhaps to use those sort of structures?
You know, to be honest, if you don't want to get complicated about all the tax, the wrappers are a perfect vehicle for that. Mm. You don't have to worry about tax. If you pass away, you don't have to worry about it. It's a policy in South Africa. It forms part of your South African estate. You know, the biggest concern for offshore investments is when you're directly offshore, and you pass, and then, you know, if you don't have the right structures in place, it could become very complicated and costly.
Yeah, because
you need an offshore will. There's a process called probate where you essentially reconcile. You have to locate your offshore assets, pay all outstanding bills, and then distribute those what remains to your beneficiaries. And that can be a long, drawn-out, costly process. So there are ways of I suppose, avoiding probate and those additional administrative kind of burdens associated with having direct offshore investments. Mm-hmm. And a good way of avoiding that is investing via the wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ways of I suppose, achieving that if you're investing in a share portfolio, and that is through a deathbed donation.
I've got that.
Yes.
So deathbed donation is it goes to my husband.
Which is amazing.
You still pay your tax.
Mm.
It's not a way of avoiding tax, but it doesn't, because you've donated it technically the day before you die, doesn't form part of your estate.
But his donation is tax. If between spouses, there wouldn't be, but if I could leave that to my children.
Yes.
So I could actually make my children the beneficiaries of the donation, but then immediately there's a 20% donations tax. Mm. But there's always going to be tax.
You don't try to avoid paying taxes.
I spent a whole day at a tax thing about offshore investing and trusts and all of this, and I worked out, keep it simple, you're always going to pay tax.
Yes.
So just keep it simple. Mm. Don't go and layer structure upon, except the wrapper, I think, does make sense. But all these trusts and that, I promise they've closed every loophole now.
Mm.
So you're pretty much going to pay 20%.
Absolutely.
Whether it's CGT or whether it's donations tax, somewhere along the line, it's 20% is going to be taxed.
And I think my tax is something that I think governments are needing more and more of. So you know, it's just part of life, I think, for most investors. Critically for me, at the end of the day, what you need to know is that you need to go offshore for diversification, as Doug said earlier. You need to go into quality type companies. You need to, you know, companies that are able to share profits, that are grow them sustainably, and you need to not pay too much for it. And I think the companies we've been speaking about, we feel is where you need to be at this point in time. It's very uncertain out there, and this brings a lot of certainty to investing.
And certainly after our discussion, I think in one of our previous podcasts about bond yields overseas, it seems to me that dividend paying companies are about the only thing you should be looking at. I mean, we've got friends who live in Germany who actually, the bank accounts, banks now are negative interest rates.
Yeah.
So he puts money in the bank, we get upset at bank fees. He puts money in the bank and they take interest off. So he gets less money.
Why would you put money in the bank then?
Exactly, because banks force you to, because you can't walk around with cash anymore.
Yes.
I'm telling you, there's a con going on. We should be thankful.
And I think there's a fear of deflation in some of these first world economies, because growth is slow, inflation is low around the world, and as you rightfully pointed out, banking at 2.5 to 3% dividend yield. In those environments where inflation isn't high, you're starting with a real return to start with, just in the form of income return. And then if those companies that we typically invest in have pricing power and the ability to grow volumes, which leads to dividend growth over time, which should translate into capital growth, which all suggests that you're going to get a decent real return, which is a return over and above inflation if you're a long-term investor. When I think about offshore investing, I think, you know, we live in South Africa. It's difficult to get on a plane and go and relocate. But in terms of financial assets, it's easy to move money offshore. And if you adopt that perspective, what do you want to do at the end of the day? You want to invest in the best investments you can find.
Mm.
And a number of those investments, from our perspective, are listed offshore. When you consider how small South Africa's.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's, Maplo, you're going to go and open up a offshore investment now.
I have to.
Thanks to the guys. And in our final investment series episode next week, we'll be focusing on building a retirement strategy.
Yes, and this is a very important topic, especially as future market returns are expected to be lower than we are used to.
I know. You were saying, Maplo, your parents as well.
Yeah.
They're coming up to retirement. Yep. The returns are getting lower than what they expected, and they're worried. So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you,
because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.